OK, thanks, Linda. Now, we've a big Friday interview for you this week with one of the most high-profile and most successful managers in local football. However, at the end of last season, David Jeffrey and Linfield parted company after a spell that saw him lead the club to 31 major honours, including 9 league titles. In the interview, he talks about how football took over his life, how the death of former Northern Ireland international and Glentoran boss Alan McDonald changed his outlook, and how management affected his own health. But we began our chat with a trip back to where it all started for David Jeffrey, the schoolboy.
Primary school was at Dundonald Primary. They were extremely happy days, and one where it was just full of fun and frolics, and where at an early age football sort of played a big, big part. I will never forget, actually, a parents' evening and mother and father coming home and berating me the next morning because I'd written an essay how I wanted to be a full-time footballer, and being told quite sternly, "You'll never make it, boy."
So at that early age, that was the dream?
That was the dream. I remember, Joel, we lived in the Grantshire Road in Dundonald, and beside it was the field owned by the McDowell family. And that's where all of the children from the Grantshire Road and Wanstead Gardens and beyond would have come and played football in Mr. McDowell's field. And I remember on many's a day, when maybe not everybody was coming out to play, I would have gone out and set the jumpers down as the goalposts, and I would have been the goalkeeper, the defender, and the centre forward all in one. I would have sort of struck the ball and then run as quickly as I could and make a diving tackle and then a save. So that love of sport and that love of football was there from a very, very early age.
And when you were diving about and making all these tackles and these saves, who were you in your mind? Who were the footballing heroes?
George Best.
The only one?
George Best was the only one. What a fabulous, fabulous player. And right from that age, in fact, my allegiance, for Manchester United, really started, wasn't with respect, wasn't about Manchester United, it was about George Best and being one of our own.
He's one of your heroes, he's at Manchester United, you've written your essay, and then all of a sudden, off to Manchester United you go.
Yes, it was Bob Bishop had spotted me, and I'd played for the Northern Ireland schoolboys a year young, and was invited across in trial.
What's that like, David?
I remember going across, it was the Easter time, and I went to Arsenal for the first week of Easter and being dreadfully intimidated. And, it was very much, taking maybe a big fish out of a small pond and putting him into this massive, massive big sea. And I've got to say, that week at Arsenal, I crashed and burned. And but it was a very good experience in that, for my second week of trials when I went to Manchester United, it really had.
Could have gone the other way, though, as well. Could have destroyed you.
Possibly. But thankfully, my mother and father made me of sort of sterner stuff. And I suppose in many ways I have it in my mind that was, a good learning curve, a good learning experience. And I went across to Manchester United in trial. Never forget that week, because there was a plane strike and we obviously weren't able to get home by air, and so we travelled home in the Liverpool boat, and Bob Bishop, in the sort of close to midnight, said, "Listen, son, would you like to sign for Manchester United?"
And, on the boat?
On the boat. And I said, "Yes, of course." And I was 14 years of age.
The time at Manchester United, how did you find that when you first went across? Did you take to it like the duck to water, or were there times when you thought, actually, that this is going to be tough?
Well, again, Joel, I was very fortunate and blessed in that Manchester United, for my last year at school, wanted me to go across. And
what year is this?
This is 1978.
Right.
1978, they wanted me to go across, 78-79 season, wanted me to go across and live over in Manchester and go to school. But mother was always very clear about my education, and obviously having worked so hard to get me to Sullivan, she thought it was very important that I should at least do my O-levels. Only the older people in the audience will remember those. And so this compromise came about where that Manchester United would fly me across every other weekend, and I would play for the youth teams. And back in those days, it was either the A or B team. in the old Lancashire League, and in doing so, that prepared me for sort of the full time part of it. I left Sullivan in June 79 and joined Manchester United, and during that period then what had been agreed was an apprenticeship contract and then a 3-year professional contract.
And for younger listeners as well, David, this isn't a Manchester United used to winning title after title after title. At this time, it's a very different club.
This is a very, very different club. And to be fair, a very family orientated club, a very homely club, very, very well looked after.
Mostly good times there, but when you think of the recollections?
First 2 years were exceptionally good. I was making decent progress, was playing regularly in the United youth team, was playing regularly for the Northern Ireland youth team, was getting a little bit of a sniff of the reserves, and Mr. Sexton, who was the manager at the time, was pleased with my progress and was encouraging me and saying by the end of my 3rd year of my contract, then I should be knocking on the door of the first team squad. Unfortunately for me, Mr. Sexton went at the end of my second full year at Manchester United. Ron Atkinson came in, obviously the whole change of staff. And as I know now, when there's a change of staff, then there's new opinions. And it would be fair to say that in my 3rd year, it wasn't overly successful. I really didn't progress as maybe I would have hoped, and that was disappointing. And I think probably the harsh reality of football was when Ron Atkinson called me and sort of coming to the end of my contract and simply said, son, I don't think you're good enough to play for Manchester United, and on that basis we will not be renewing your contract. And it was as simple and as sharp and as short as that.
What's that like?
That was gut-wrenching. Absolutely gut-wrenching.
Did you think it was over?
At that stage, yes, I remember sort of blubbering back something like, well, I think you're wrong and I'll prove you wrong. And I was trying to be very much, you know, there's no way you'll put me down, not a chance in the world. You know, who do you, not a chance. I have a bigger spirit than that, you know, and sort of visions of a mother and father. And they're sort of very much my dad, you know, don't you let him knock you down. Remember, you're a Jeffrey. Remember, you're a Jeffrey, you know. And but it was desperately difficult. And yet, the crazy thing about it was the person who, and I would say that rescued isn't too dramatic a word, who rescued my career was Ronnie McFall.
Well, this is the start of a friendship with a man who you would end up then to go, you know, toe-to-toe with as managers. But the irony is, maybe a lot of people don't know this, that when you came back, you were playing that game under Ronnie for Glentoran.
Yeah, there was a situation at Glentoran. Glentoran were playing Liverpool in a friendly game, and Ronnie found himself in a situation where he maybe wanted to bring some players in, and he actually brought myself and Kel McDermott over for the game against Liverpool. And I will never forget on the morning of that game, saying to my mum, his mum, you know, I've had not a great season, and you know, if tonight doesn't go right, that's it. I'm not kicking another ball. That's it. And my mum very simply said to me, she said, just trust in God, you'll be fine. Just go out there and just go and play and you'll be fine. And very simple words. And I will never forget that night going down and playing. And I understand now, obviously, the Liverpool team, that it was a very strong side. And there's no way they're going to come across and break their necks. You know, you had Ian Rush and Craig Johnson, and you could rattle all their names off. But in those days, I didn't realise that, you know, I didn't have the insight that they, you know, these players maybe wouldn't be coming and be fully committed. But I certainly was going to be fully committed. And I played the first half alongside big Dermot Keighley. And what an experience that was. I thought, if I kicked people, my goodness gracious me, Dermot was something else. But a marvellous evening. And it was one of those ones where if I kicked it, literally God guided it. I remember clearing a ball off the line. Every pass seemed to go to a Glentoran player. And as you know, Joel, and people of my era will know that passing wasn't my strongest point. But it was just one of those nights where everything went well, and I was so thankful and so grateful. And Bob Bishop again played a big part, because he then came in the next morning and said, would you take a call from Roy Coyle from Linfield? He wants to speak with you. And this was all brand new to me, all of this. My head was still in a spin from getting the news from Ron Atkinson. Was so thankful to Ronnie McFall for giving me a chance to, in some ways, rediscover my belief in myself and my love of football. And then I had Roy Coyle, the then Linfield manager, inviting me to play in a youth tournament in Harlem. Returned back home then, had offers from Glentore, Linfield and Ards. And
the rest, as they say, is history.
The rest, as they say, is history. As I say, we'll always be grateful to Ronnie for that. And, you know, people probably don't realise how close I was for signing for Glentore.
Time is against us, and I don't mean to make it sound as if we've sort of glossed over what was an illustrious playing career. But in terms of management, because there are a lot of things I would love to know. And did you at any point feel, now looking back, that you allowed yourself to be almost all consumed by the job, and that it almost took over everything?
Yes, without any shadow of a doubt.
Do you regret it?
No, because I felt that that's what the job needed, and if I wasn't giving it, you know, more than 100%, then there was something wrong. The one thing that...
So what are we talking, sleepless nights, 24/7, the works?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Certainly in the latter days, you know, sleep was at a premium.
I mean, it got to a point, David, where it affected your health.
Yes, there was that time. It's Pat McShane will not appreciate this. I remember, ever forget the game. I think it was it maybe it was against Dungannon. And again, it was around the time when questions were being asked about my future, and we're getting beaten on the day. And Pat scored a goal. We ended up drawing on the day, and he ran the full length of the pitch, jumped on top of me.
I nearly killed you.
I toppled. And then shortly after that, then I had an event, an experience, unexplained. But I knew coming home from work one day I wasn't feeling particularly well. My doctor, my GP, Dr. Colin Hagen, is a remarkable man, and I just went straight to see him, and he did an ECG, and I was in the Royal within half an hour, 45 minutes, very, very quickly. And they discovered I had a irregular heartbeat, and we had to sort of look at then at lifestyle and what I was doing and the stresses and the strain. And to this day, it was unexplained as to why that particular incident happened. But looking back, I would say that there is no doubt the sort of the stress would have been a contributing factor.
Did things change at that point for you? Was it an alarm bell?
They changed to a degree, because it was a couple of weeks off, and my ear faithful assistant manager, Bram McLaughlin, stepped into the breach. But I suppose then over a period of time when things got that little bit, or I felt better, then you got back in the treadmill again. And
so you never at any point then thought, I need to walk away from this?
No, absolutely not.
Did what happened to Alan McDonald shortly after his time at Glentoran, and it had an effect on his health, and then sadly Alan passed away, as we all know. I mean, did that have an impact on you when you saw that happening to someone who'd been under pressure in a football job?
Knocked me for six. Yeah, Alan McDonald was a very special man. Alan played a year under me, and I remember him being part of that fantastic schoolboy side who won the Victory Shield the first time. Norman Whiteside was part of that group. And them and Billy Bingham was around. We actually never had under-21 internationals or under-23 internationals, but Billy Bingham would bring us together every so often, and I would have... Obviously, Alan would have been part of that. He was a real star at QPR at that stage. And then, obviously, when he came back into Irish League football, what a dear man. Absolutely dear man. And I remember the very difficult period that Alan went through. And certainly his passing was a massive wake-up call, because we lost a gentleman, and I can truly say an absolute gentleman and a great footballing man. But certainly his passing and all of it went with it, had a pronounced influence on me.
What did you do?
I thought, ultimately, if this ever gets to the point where I think it's too much, then I will walk away. And prior to that, I would never, ever, ever considered doing that.
So is that what happened? To a point?
Yeah. There is no doubt that it was actually after the game against Ballymena.
In the Cup?
In the Irish Cup last year. We'd started the league. I knew that we were... We had a fantastic end of the 2011-2012 season. That was the sixth double out of seven. And we were absolutely fantastic. And that day we had a tremendous victory against the Crusaders. And in hindsight, we probably had squeezed the absolute most out of that team. And yet to make any drastic change would have been wrong. And those players deserved another year. But the next year, we were pretty dreadful. And were miles behind both Cliftonville and Crusaders. And we started the season very well in Europe and yet dreadfully in the league. We played Ballymena in the Cup. And I will never forget big Gordy McCartney, who is the physio at Ballymena. And he says, first 20 minutes, David, you could have run out of sight. And we did. We absolutely battered Ballymena, but we couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. And then fantastic goal by Alan Jenkins, and then a quite sublime strike by David Cushley. And I'd always like to think that I became honest enough in the game and philosophical enough to say, well, if you don't score goals, you don't win games. But we disappointedly went out of the Cup. And that was a quite dreadful weekend. Dreadful weekend. Because I was gutted, and I can say this genuinely, not first and foremost for myself, but genuinely for the players, and most genuinely for the supporters, and disappointed that, you know, we seemed to have promised so much, and then when it was coming to critical periods or critical times or critical moments, we just weren't able to get ourselves over the line. And that was probably the toughest weekend. And I think if I got a couple of hours sleep over that weekend, that was maximum.
A lot of people listening to this, opinion is very divided on Linfield as a club. And for many years, and still many will look upon Linfield and see it as this bastion of Protestantism. Can you understand where that view comes from, and what difference did you try to make, and is that something that you're proud of?
I can understand where it comes from, Joel, and yet in another way I can't. But I don't think that it's about being apologetic of where we come from. You know, depending on what area and what community, you know, you're in, you represent that, and then obviously that's where your supporters come from. So I have no difficulty, you know, Linfield being recognised, if you like, as a club where the vast majority would be Protestant supporters.
But it's this journey almost from, you know, a club where, at a period, if you had said we're going to sign a Catholic, you'd have been hounded out, whereas moving to a point where your last captain was a Catholic.
I think what I've got to say first and foremost, and I've got to say this in not defending Linfield, but just keeping the record straight, you know, that there was never a time that there was, actually before the troubles were about, there was a number of Catholics that played for Linfield. And that's simply fact, and that's on the record. Troubles change things, and it was difficult then for, because of the way things were, for Catholic lads to come and play for Linfield Football Club. Things were probably broken a little bit, if you like, by Trevor Anderson in the first instance, when he was bringing the likes of Desi Gorman up and Pat Fenlon and a number of players from the south. But I've got to honestly say that when I took the job on, you know, it was simply about this, that I didn't care if you were from Mars, that if you had the ability, if you were technically good enough, physically strong enough, mentally strong enough, and had the desire to play for Linfield Football Club, who, in my mind, were the biggest and the best, then that's all you had to do. And that was our, and that was our baseline. And you know, I've got some great stories which would take too much time, but players who I could genuinely say I didn't know what church they went to on a Sunday. And quite frankly, I wasn't interested. Did they want to play in the Blue of Linfield, and did they want to be successful, and did they want to win trophies, and did they have an insatiable appetite for success, and did they believe they were the best? That was the qualifications of a Blue man. That was the qualifications of a Linfield player under David Jeffrey. And if you weren't a winner, then I wasn't interested.
You mentioned an awful lot throughout, and you've mentioned it as well here, and the influence of your Christian faith and your parents. I mean, those two pillars, almost. When the end came at Linfield, you described it, I think, and you're on record as describing it as a bit of a circus. Is that where you went back to? Is that what got you through? What was the difficult time? What was it like?
I think first and foremost, Joe, I'm probably the most untypical man who has an extremely strong Christian faith, in Northern Ireland, certainly. I don't ever like to set myself up on a pedestal in any way, shape or form. And I certainly would never want to pronounce myself as some example. But what I am very definite and very clear about is the faith I have in my God. And it was only through His strength and the support of Mum and Dad and family that got me through what was a difficult period. Following the Ballymena game, I did quite some thinking, and then asked to meet with certain members of the board, and really we discussed what was the best way forward for myself and obviously for the club, and we came to very amicable agreement. And
did the now infamous YouTube video, the karaoke, did that have a bearing, or is that a myth?
No, it would be.
If you'd wanted to stay, would you have been able to stay even if that video had happened?
I think, to be honest with you, Joel, to take the video in isolation, it was so blooming innocent, it was untrue. And some people thought more about it than others, you know, and I'm going to leave it there and say absolutely nothing more. That was, as I say, at best, or at worst, rather, at worst, embarrassing.
So what about next? I mean, I don't know if you missed the buzz. You might miss the buzz, but not the pressure. I know we now have David Jeffrey, the gym bunny. Will we see David Jeffrey, David Jeffrey, the politician? Didn't we read in the paper at one point after you left Linfield that apparently the UUP and the DUP were in a race for your signature?
That came from. Certainly very nice to be thought of by others. Before I went and I trained as a social worker, I trained as a youth and community worker. So I've always been very much interested in community and obviously politics, which are all around that.
Could you see yourself as a politician?
I've never really sat down and thought about it, Joel, to tell you the truth.
You would then be able to definitively answer the question if you'd be more unpopular as a football manager or as a politician.
that would be an interesting question. But no, I've never really applied my thought to that. I know that what I've always wanted to do is try to make sure that I've made a difference, and hence that's why I went into youth and community work and then latterly social work. But politics is something which I haven't really sat down and considered. You asked a question early about how all-absorbing was Linfield, and it was ginormous. And I've really spent the last 6-8 months
catching up, almost.
Rediscovering a new life, Joel, to tell you the truth.
So if you've got this life back, almost, that you're saying, and the pressure that you were under, and the fact that you now look back and think, actually, I was all-consumed, and you're seeing things now you're missing out on, does that almost lead you to think that actually I don't really miss it, and I may not want to go back to it?
No, I think probably what I would say, and this is certainly not standing the fence, is that always be open to what is presented and what comes before you. But I'm not actively going, looking or searching or wondering, I wonder will this happen or will that happen or will the other happen.
You've learned that there is life after football.
There very much is, you know, and I do feel that, you know, there is a plan for this next part of my life. And what I've got to do, I feel, is just to be still and to wait and to see what way things are meant to go for me. I'm literally taking a day at a time and fully enjoying every single day.